You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Schools have a lot on their plate these days, with more attention to standards and accountability and calls to teach the basics with a focus on reading, writing, and math, and more demand for STEM education to prepare students for careers in science and technology.
Our next guest says we often lose sight of what he says should be a core mission of schools: teaching students to be the citizens of the future. And not just any kind of citizens, thoughtful, engaged, critical thinkers who take an active role in representative government.
Joel Westheimer joins us now. He's a professor and research chair in democracy and education at the University of Ottawa. His newest book is called What Kind of Citizen? Educating Our Children for the Common Good. Joel, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Veronica.
Well, early on, you say one important question is not so much whether schools teach citizenship, but how they teach citizenship. And you lay out three kinds of citizens we could be training. What do you make of the different kinds?
Yeah, you know, so Joe, this builds on research that my colleague Joe Kahn and I did over many years across the country, and we looked at a whole bunch of programs that say that they're teaching good citizenship. And we were interested in, you know, if you go out into the street and you ask 100 people whether they think schools should teach kids to be good citizens, you'll get a lot of head nodding, a lot of people saying, you know, sure. But if you ask a little deeper than that, you know, well, what does that mean? What is a good citizen to you, or what exactly should schools teach? That's when you start to get disagreements and the sparks start to fly. And I think that's because when we talk about visions of what schools should teach, we're really talking about what we think the ideal society is, what kind of society we want to live in. And those are our deep questions. And we looked at a bunch of programs and decided that there were a lot of very different kinds of programs out there with different kinds of goals. And what we found that was that most of them could be described by these three visions of a good citizen, because, you know, professors love to categorize things like that. So it doesn't mean that every program fits neatly into one of the categories, but it's a helpful way of looking at them. And the three that we called them was the personally responsible citizen, the participatory citizen, as in participation, and the social justice-oriented citizen. And I'll tell you just a little bit about each one. The personally responsible citizen programs were ones that wanted kids to be personally responsible, to not litter or to show up to work on time, to pay taxes, to be nice to their friends and neighbors, to help an old person across the street or give blood when there's a blood drive, things like that. And there's a lot of programs that aim towards those. Some of your listeners might think of them as character education programs, where you build good character and you teach people, you know, to be good to good people, the kind of people you'd want to live next door to. Fewer programs aimed at this different vision of citizenship, which was participatory or participation. And those were ones that wanted to teach kids about how government works, how community agencies work, and how they can get involved in their community and help organize things. So, for example, if participatory citizens were organizing a food drive, the personally responsible citizens would be showing up and donating a can of food because they're good people, right? And the last vision of citizenship, which was the least commonly represented in schools, we called social justice-oriented because these were programs that explicitly aimed at having kids look at the root causes of problems. These programs want kids to know how government works and to be personally responsible, but also to get at the causes of some of the major issues that we face today and look at the controversies around those and the different possible solutions. So if I use that metaphor I was using before, if the participatory citizens are organizing a food drive, the personally responsible citizens are donating a can of food, then the social justice-oriented citizens are asking, how come in one of the richest countries in the world we have people who are hungry? And what can we do about that? They're asking, getting to the root causes. And I think that all three of these visions of citizenship are important, but they're not all equally represented in schools.
Right, and on the face of it, all of these look like good models for citizenship, but when we take the personally responsible citizen, the one who is donating the food, say, at the food drive, you think that's not enough. Why?
Yeah, it's. I'm so glad you asked that, because, it, of course, that's a good thing. No one could be against people volunteering at a soup kitchen or donating a can of food or doing any of those things. But one of the things I like to ask people when I'm giving a talk or speaking with parents or educators is what makes our schools in the United States different from schools, let's say, in a totalitarian dictatorship or a military dictatorship or an authoritarian regime. So is there anything that should be different in schools, about schools in the United States, than there are in schools in, say, North Korea or China or Indonesia? And a lot of people would like to say, well, of course, I mean, you know, American schools have to be different because we're a democratic society. But when you think about those goals of the personally responsible citizen, there is not a country in the world, on the planet, that wouldn't be happy if the citizens of that country were didn't litter, you know, or were honest, or paid their taxes, or didn't do drugs, or showed up to school on time. Every country in the world wants that, and of course we want that too. But we have to want something more, because a democratic society requires citizens to participate in a way that an authoritarian regime doesn't. An authoritarian regime counts on one vision of truth handed down by either a religious leader or a military leader or a king or a queen. And we count on citizens themselves being involved in crafting our own future. So it's like that famous Thomas Jefferson quote, if the citizens are not well educated enough to govern their own affairs, the solution is not to take that power of governance away from them, but rather to educate them. And that really formed one of the founding purposes of public education in the United States. And it's one of the purposes of public education that I think we've lost in this current decade of school reform.
Right. So if you look at an education system that's looking at turning out social justice-oriented citizens, you're going to have kids, students who know their history, who know various perspectives, not just one perspective. They're going to have to be taught to be critical thinkers. Do you see that happening now?
That's absolutely right. And unfortunately, it is happening in small ways in individual classrooms with excellent teachers across the country. But all those teachers who are teaching critical thinking are doing it in spite of what's happening in the broader education reform. One of the chapters in my book that you mentioned at the opening, What Kind of Citizen? Educating Our Children for the Common Good, one of the chapters is titled No Child Left Thinking, which is a play on the No Child Left Behind Act. I know some teachers actually call it No Child Left Untested. A few teachers I've met call it No Child Left, which is actually one of my favorite names for it. But I call it No Child Left Thinking because I want to draw attention to the ways that that legislation and others like it, Race to the Top, and even now the Common Core policies, have caused a restriction in critical thinking in the classroom because they focused an endless amount of time on preparation for, you know, months and months of preparation for taking standardized tests in only two subject areas, math and literacy. And in the process, we've pushed to the background or off the table altogether other subject areas and deeper critical thinking in all the subject areas because we want kids to be able to regurgitate answers on these tests.
And what do you think the consequences of that are to a citizenry that you're trying to prepare for the future, to tackle problems, to ask critical questions? What is the effect, do you think, of putting an emphasis on standardized tests? And, of course, advocates of that would say you want kids to have a body of knowledge that's common, that will prepare them for college and a career. But what happens then, do you think?
Well, first of all, I think that the consequences are that we lose a bit of the strength of our democracy because we are teaching kids that the purposes of school is just career training, individual gain, and so forth. And, of course, those have always been part of schooling, but they've only been a part. Schooling was also about teaching kids about their place in society and what role they can play and how they can help to improve society. So that's, you know, the for the common good part of the book title. It is true that you said, and I'm glad you brought that up, that of course we want schools to teach what's often called the basics. And sometimes I say to people, you know, please raise your hand if you are a member of the group Parents and Educators Against Kids Knowing How to Read. And no one raises their hand, of course, because there is no such group. There are no, I've never met a teacher who doesn't care whether a kid can read or add numbers. The problem comes when we stop there, that we all care whether kids can read, and we all want kids to learn how to read, but many teachers also want kids to know what's worth reading and to know how what they're reading pertains to their daily life and to our society at large. We want kids to be able to add numbers, of course, but we also want them to think about what those numbers add up to and how those numbers create meaning for what they're going to do in the world. And so what we're really suffering from right now is a kind of poverty of the imagination about what the goals of schooling can be for. And we need to, yes, teach the basics. Nobody's against that, but also link those to a much broader vision of what the purpose of schooling is in our society.
We're talking right now with Joel Westheimer about his new book. It's called What Kind of Citizen? Educating Our Children for the Common Good.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you think schools should focus on critical thinking and the role of citizens? How should these things be taught? Do you think standardized testing is stifling that mission? And if you work in education, how does this play out at your school? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We continue our conversation with Joel Westheimer. His new book is called What Kind of Citizen? Educating Our Children for the Common Good. He says our schools should be teaching kids how to be thoughtful, critical thinkers and to prepare them to embrace the role of an active citizen.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you agree that citizenship and the role of citizens in a democratic society should be a focus, a mission in our schools? Do you think it gets enough attention in the age of standardized testing? How does this work in the school that you work at, attend, or send your kids to? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on our Central Time Facebook page.
And Joel, as we talk about preparing kids to be educated citizens, one thing that seems clear, it's not a simple enterprise. It's something that is going to take time, and that means classroom instruction time. And we've got this age that we live in now where we have this competitive global marketplace. We don't want kids falling behind in math, in science. Does citizen-focused education prepare kids, do you think, for that kind of global competition that it seems we're going to be facing and already are facing?
Well, it's funny. People always talk about this global competition and 21st century learning and so forth. And yet it's always talked about through the lens of a kind of 19th century model of what education is. So, for example, there's an enormous emphasis now on kids acquiring amounts of information, bits of facts and knowledge that they need to apparently, you know, to, the claim is to compete in the global economy. The funny thing is that we all carry around devices in our pockets that can get any piece of information we need in about 3 or 4 seconds. And it's not actually a lack of information that we have a problem with. It's too much information. And what kids need to learn is how to figure out what information is worthwhile, what the different perspectives for different information are, where it comes from, the motivations behind emphasizing certain kinds of information and not emphasizing other kinds of information. And these are the kind of skills you learn when you take critical analysis and critical thinking seriously. And it's the kind of skills that are more appropriate for our society today than they ever have been before. Now, no one thinks that kids don't need any information or any facts. What they do need is a way of understanding how to interpret information and how to sort through vast amounts of information, because all of us are flooded with huge quantities of information every day.
We're going to go to our callers now. We've got Jonathan with us in Minneapolis. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, thanks.
One of the comments that I heard just now, especially with the concept of technology at our fingertips, what I say to my students is, it's not my job to give information, but to interpret information. When you have hundreds of thousands of web pages that can contradict one another from the first search to the second. It's about how do we read those information. I think that the critical thinking skills really need to take precedence when information is so abundant. How do you interpret that information? And when we teach a generation of kids how to answer a question, we need to also tell them what to do with the information that we give them. I think that's something that Common Core doesn't address.
And Jonathan, just real quickly before I let you go, do you think there is a common basis out there among educators about how to teach critical thinking?
I think that critical thinking skills take us all the way back to the classics that we read. A classic style, for example, does not get lost through the years, but the ability for a student to understand that classic is what's getting thrown off. I think that most educators believe that there is a correct system, but it's when you're trying to evaluate it with a system that we know doesn't work as far as a test on bubbles isn't really going to get the critical thinking skills proven to our students because governments don't care to see that result.
Okay, thank you, Jonathan. And Joel, what do you think about that, about looking for critical thinking as being the most important thing, just as you were saying it, and do you think that there's agreement on how to teach critical thinking?
Well, I think that our schools need a lot more teachers like Jonathan, so I'm glad to hear that he is a teacher. I think he's absolutely right that it's interpretation is the kind of skills we need. And then I do want to say something about whether there's this one best way to teach critical thinking, because I think the answer to that is no, and the clear issue here is that there's not one best way to teach anything, which is what the problem of standardization is. You know, on the one hand, we keep talking about standards and accountability, and in some sense, I've never met a teacher who didn't have standards or who didn't feel accountable. You know, teachers feel accountable to their students, to the parents, to the school, to the community. The problem's not with standards or accountability. The problem is with standardization. As soon as, and because standardization means making everything the same, and as soon as we try and standardize the curriculum so that it's easier to digest for performing on the bubble tests, as Jonathan called them, as soon as we do that, we're trying to make teachers interchangeable, like assembly line workers, and that simply takes the best of education and brings everything down to a lowest common denominator and saps the passion out of it. We want a teacher like Jonathan to be able to draw on his particular skills and talents and his students' experiences to build the best kind of educational environment that he can. And we want another teacher to do that same task, but differently, drawing on their interests and passions and their students' interests and passions and experiences. So there's no problem with standards or accountability, but when it comes to trying to make education all the same, like McDonald's, that's where we run into problems.
We're talking to Joel Westheimer, professor and research chair in democracy and education at the University of Ottawa. His newest book is What Kind of Citizen, Educating Our Children for the Common Good. Let's get another quick call in. Eric joins us in Stoughton. Hi, Eric.
Hi. Fascinating topic and one near to my heart. I'm a university professor at a two-year school, so freshman and sophomore. I get them right out of high school. And I have one comment and then a question. My concern is that we're losing the ability to solve problems, the ability to look at a situation or a problem and identify the things that we know and the things that we don't know and how to deal with those. But from a civic standpoint, the politicization of information, particularly knowledge, has become a real problem. Students aren't equipped to identify what's bias and what's trying to gather their attention and influence their opinions and what's actual real tested, validated information. It's very frustrating.
And we're going to leave that there before your question, Eric, because we're running short of time. And briefly, Joel, what would you say to that?
Yeah, so what's interesting about what Eric said is this idea of the politicization of knowledge. And in one sense, he's using the term politics in this way that's become popular in our culture, which is as like a four-letter word. Like if I say, oh, God, Veronica, you're just being political, it's like you're a mudslinging candidate running for office and you just care about your own advancement. But the word politics has a much richer history and, in fact, was a positive term. Bernard Crick, in his famous book, In Defense of Politics, said that politics was a great civilizing activity. It was the way that people in a democratic society come together to work out their differences and move forward with social policy. And so I think Eric is absolutely right in the sense that we need to teach kids critical thinking and analysis of political issues. But when people say, you know, we need to put keep politics out of the school, I actually think we need to put politics back into the school.
And we leave it there. Joel, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely, Veronica. It was my pleasure.
That was Joel Westheimer, professor and research chair in democracy and education at the University of Ottawa. His newest book is called What Kind of Citizen? Educating Our Children for the Common Good.